What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
It's Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly here on this Monday night. Happy you're along with us. Matt feeling a little bit under the weather, so sitting in tonight and holding things down, doing the best we can. I was just kind of perusing some Twitter here. Perusing some X here as we sat in the break and was noticing, I saw on another timeline a tweet from Taylor Russolino, kicker, who was with the Battlehawks prior to COVID, so the original iteration of the St. Louis Battlehawks, and he's making a case to come back. He tweeted 5 hours ago, seeing the team is in need of the kicker position, why don't we run it back and pick up right where we left off prior to COVID separating us? I was on my rise throughout the first half of the season. I love that city. I love the organization, and I am beyond ready to put that Battlehawks jersey on again. I love that there are athletes out there. First of all, it's cool just to be able to use social media in that way, right? We are able to attract attention to different issues or different things than we ever were before because of the social media. In the same timeline, actually, I saw somebody retweet an issue that Chris Pronger was having with his Uber service. So two different ways to use social media that I have found to be effective, because I've also gone to the social media route to try to make some things happen customer service wise, or just to gain the attention of a company. I'll tell you my best story without giving the company a name, but I bought a pair of shoes, and almost immediately after buying them, these were not dress shoes, not tennis shoes, kind of the cross between the two. So a more of a casual shoe, but the sole was separating from the shoe on the inside as my foot bent where I was walking. And so I took to social media, to Twitter, that back then, I think it was Twitter. I took to Twitter and made some mention, tagged that company. They immediately DM'd me and asked me to, you know, send a picture of one of the tags or something. And I'm not kidding you that within less than a week, I had a brand new pair of those shoes on my doorstep. So it was really cool. And it was that's my biggest success probably as it comes to the using the social media. But I did think it was funny to see Taylor Russolino really trying to make his case to come back to the Battlehawks. And so I think it's cool that he was using social media. I also think it's very cool that he wants to come back to St. Louis and play for the Battlehawks. And that just tells you something we already knew. It tells you what all you need to know about the fans and the organization that the Battlehawks are, and that the St. Louis fans are, and that it's hard to get any better. Certainly doesn't get any better in the UFL than the fans in St. Louis. And they proved that over and over during the last couple of seasons. And certainly even when you're talking about the playoff games that were in St. Louis, including the UFL championship game that was in St. Louis. But I thought that was really cool to kind of see that he wants to come back here and he's trying to draw the attention. So we'll follow along there, and I will see where that goes and whether Taylor and the Battlehawks are reunited, and whether that strategy did him well and gets him a job coming up here in the 2024 season. 2025 season, I should say, which that schedule just came out, by the way. And there's going to be some Friday night games on the Battlehawks schedule this year, including they're going to open the season, the UFL season, on a Friday down in Houston. So that's kind of cool that they'll get that first Friday night game, and that Friday night is a new night for the UFL. And so to go along with some Saturday games and some Sunday games, we'll have some Friday games. The Battlehawks have 6 home games, and they're evenly split with 2 Fridays, 2 Saturdays, 2 Sundays. There's the Fridays are Friday night games. The Saturdays, they've got an evening game and an afternoon game. And the Sunday games, I think they may have a couple different afternoon times there as well. But really cool, and cool to add the Friday night. And I'm sure that part of that, or all of it, was predicated by TV and the TV contracts that they have. And they're going to again use Fox and FS1 and ABC and ESPN. And so all of those partners splitting up, and that works out, I guess, the best is to get some of those Friday night games. But I think that's pretty cool. But you get another night in there of UFL games, but also that means more exposure for the league because, as I said, that is probably totally decided by the TV contracts and the fact that the TV contracts or the TV networks wanted the Friday night games added. So that's pretty cool. I have got to venture out for the first time tomorrow. I'm going to have to make my way from St. Louis over into over to Edwardsville. So I'm hoping that by tomorrow midday, MoDOT and IDOT have at least things in better condition. I know that they are, I know that MoDOT anyway is severely understaffed. So appreciate all those folks that are out there and getting to those roads. We finally got a county plow into our neighborhood today. We're an unincorporated area, so it's not like we're a high traffic area, and certainly not something that is of high importance either. But it was nice to see the plow come through here earlier today. But certainly appreciate all those guys and girls who are in the trucks and doing all that work so that we can get where we need to be. And I know tomorrow things will start to open up a little bit, and there'll be a lot more people needing to get a lot more places than probably there has been the last couple of days. I know a lot of schools are still off here over the, at least tomorrow. And but other things will start opening up. And as I said, we'll have to start moving and getting places more so than we have been over the last couple of days. We've got guests to get to here in the 7 o'clock hour. Nate Gatter is first up on that list, and he's going to join us and talk. We'll talk about a lot of things, but again, I want to just get an update from Nate Gatter and the things that he is doing here lately, because he's doing some really good things. And I think that's cool for our listeners to hear from him and catch up with him. So we'll do that when we come back. It's Joe Potts sitting in for Matt Pauly. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. We'll take a break. We'll have Nate Gatter coming up on the other side of the break here on KMOX. We're back in on the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly on this Monday night. Glad you're along with us. As I mentioned, it's kind of accidentally become a lot of college football, basketball, a lot of college sports talk tonight. It doesn't have to be that with our next guest. We can talk a lot of stuff, and I haven't had a chance to catch up with Nate Gatter in quite a while, so I'm glad to do so tonight. You hear Nate, obviously you heard Nate a lot on the St. Louis City soccer report over the last couple of years. Nate has since gone on to do some college basketball, college football, even some NFL on national radio. Nate, thanks, man, for joining us tonight here on KMOX.
Joe, great to be with you.
I am so excited for all that you have gone on to do, and I don't think that you and I have had a chance to really catch up a lot. I know you just recently did an NFL game. How fun has it been, man, kind of relaunching the broadcast part of your career?
It's been great. I think this is, as you know, better than a lot of people, it's the kind of business where it's easy to just kind of get stuck, I think. The way that my career went was, you know, in some ways a blessing, but also a little bit of a curse in that I had a few successes very, very early on, including one doing the Gateway Grizzlies, your former position some years ago, when I was still in college, actually my first year doing pro baseball. And so I was feeling like I was ahead of the curve. And then as these things sometimes happens in this business and in others, things ebb and flow. And, those frustrations can start to mount. I think because we're in such a subjective business, there is no way to point at something. Like, I don't have sales numbers to point to and say, see, no matter what else was going on, or no matter what I might not have gotten or might have gotten, I can verify that I was this good this year, right? Like, there's no way to do that, because we work in a business where things are highly subjective, and good work is, while there are some objective touchstones, ultimately good from average, and especially separating good from great, is sort of in the eye of the beholder. And I think that can be a challenge when, if you feel like you're doing work that isn't getting out there or isn't getting in front of the right people. And you know, ultimately that it's a question of getting some good fortune at a particular time. And in my case, it was delayed long enough that I had to go through some of that frustration. But, you know, I wonder if in some ways that gives me a perspective now that I might not have had if this had worked out the same way 3 or 4 years earlier.
So what has been what's been the biggest thrill? Because I, like I said, if I'm mistaken, correct me, but the first big assignments came with the NCAA tournament, right? NCAA basketball, went on to do a full slate of football from there. And then, as I mentioned, NFL recently.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think the biggest one, because in some ways, you know, it almost makes me feel like something players talk about when we in the media ask them about, you know, how they approach a particular stage or what's going through your mind when you get to live out this dream of some kind. Because in some ways, the biggest thrills are things I remember that I had to combat at the time, right? Because
sure,
you have to be ultimately wary of getting so thrilled by something that you can't do the job, right? It's kind of like being a player. They maybe can look around for a moment, but then you got to focus and do the job. And the fact that something is a cool personal moment for me can't be allowed to influence like how I'm doing the game. To that extent, the one that I remember feeling was the most difficult was the NCAA tournament. Because I did one game before that. I did the CAA men's basketball championship game
okay.
with Tom Crean in D.C. in March. And that was really cool. But then I was doing the first four in Dayton, speaking again of your old stomping ground, like a week later. And I remember my producer is a guy named Andy Garcia, and he said, he's actually a play-by-play guy himself. He's the football and men's basketball radio voice of the Northern Illinois Huskies. So a lot of people heard his voice on the winning call of the upset over Notre Dame, which I imagine will live on even more greatly if Notre Dame ends up winning the national championship this year, and that's their only loss. But he was the producer for the game, and he said, you know, I'm going to have you sit here just partially so you can time out the billboards that we're going to read at the beginning of the broadcast, but also just so you can hear it. I'm going to have them in the studio play the open for you of like the 90 seconds or whatever, which is going to have the, you know, the big voiceover from David Lee, who does all the imaging work in his crazy deep Monster Jam voice for Westwood One. And you're going to hear the, you know, some of the highlights in the highlight montage of great moments in tournament history. You're going to hear the tournament music, all that, just so you can hear it. And I was like, okay, whatever. I didn't think anything about it. And then he played it, and it finished. And, you know, I kind of timed out the billboards, and we did all that. And we finished, and I said to him, I was like, I'm so glad that you did that, because I never would have thought of it. But if we had just done that live, and I had to hear that music and the toss to me for the first time live, I don't know if I could have handled it, right? Like, that was just – it was kind of overwhelming. And just that – the iconic music and all of that. And so I was really glad. So it's funny that the biggest thrill was not even like on the air. It was kind of in a rehearsal before we went on the air, but it allowed me, because it wasn't live, to sort of really feel it. And then it's just been the other milestones. I mean, college football is just a sport of pageantry and emotions and drama, right? And that it's these huge stadiums and epic buildup and all the history of the programs. And so being a part of some of those, you know, we were part of some really, really big games this year. Oregon and Ohio State stands out in October, Tennessee and Georgia in November, Ohio State and Michigan, the SEC championship game. I think all of those, just like huge stakes, big programs, packed stadiums. And then the NFL being the NFL, right? And that's the NFL kind of gets lost, because I did the Chargers and the Patriots in a maybe half full stadium in Foxborough, a game that didn't matter for the Patriots and sort of mattered for the Chargers in that they locked up a playoff spot, but that was really a foregone conclusion at that point. So it was something approaching a meaningless December game. And so it's a big deal to me, because it is the NFL, But compared to all the other stuff that I got to do in 2024, the emotions of that moment felt a lot more manageable.
Really interesting. Well, it is for me. Maybe not so much for some others, but I appreciate that. And as I said, I'm thrilled for you. Nate Gatter's with us here. You hear him a lot here on KMOX. So let's keep it really with the college football, at least for right now. Do you feel like the committee did they get it right? Did they get it, or did they at least get it mostly right when it comes to the college football playoff?
I think they got it as right as they practically could.
Okay.
I do think there is some discussion that we're going to have about how the automatic seedings are going to work, because I do think requiring – I understand the sentiment, and I appreciate the sentiment, but putting the 3 and 4 seeds to conference champions this year and probably at least sometimes in future years, certainly with a number 4 seed, results in sort of inorganic matchups, I think. And we don't necessarily want Ohio State and Oregon. It kind of worked out in that it was an old school Rose Bowl match in the Rose Bowl, whatever. But ordinarily, you wouldn't want those two teams to play each other in the quarterfinals, I don't think. So the committee got a little bit unlucky, and then I think there probably is some tinkering to do. My bet is ultimately we get to 16 teams eventually, because that just feels like where this is going, and some of this will take care of itself. I like that there are automatic bids for tied to conference champions, and I think there has to be at least one automatic spot for a group of five team, and that has to remain. I would be more open to tweaking that. For example, like in the current 12-team format, maybe we say, okay, the conference champions, the five highest-ranked conference champions are guaranteed to be in the top eight. So maybe they have to play in the first round, but they'll get a home game. They're not guaranteed a quarterfinal bye. And that, to me, would feel like it makes a little more sense. And I would have loved that, right? I think it'd be more fun rather than seeing Boise State get a bye. I'd rather see Boise State get a home game and a power conference team have to go out and play on the blue field in December. That'd be fun from a fan standpoint. As far as selection, I mean, the SEC noise, we cover the SEC a lot. I mean, at this point, it's the power two in college football. We all know that. I mean, almost every game we did on Westwood this year was Big Ten or SEC. And I'm an SEC guy. That's my background. Like, this is not me hating on the SEC. The 9-3 SEC teams had no business being in the playoff. I'm glad they didn't get in, and it's been borne out. And I do think we're getting to a place, and I'm not somebody, I think if you're in media, you know that the vast majority of stuff about media favoritism is blown out of proportion, but I do think it's reasonable that the common fan is inherently skeptical of how ESPN covers the SEC, because ESPN and the SEC now have a business relationship the likes of which has never existed in college sports. The amount of money that ESPN and the SEC have wrapped up in each other, not to mention that then the college football playoff has wrapped up in both entities kind of in this weird love triangle, is really, really significant. And it's not unreasonable that the average fan would look at that at least with skepticism. And so then when you get Kirk Herbstreit, for whom I have an enormous amount of respect and who has forgotten more college football than I will ever hope to know, getting on national television after having just watched Tennessee lose by 25 points to Ohio State, and he says that an 11-win Big Ten team in Indiana didn't deserve to be in the playoff so that we could get 9-3 Alabama, who lost, didn't even score a touchdown in losing 24-3 to 6-6 Oklahoma, who I watched lose to Drew Pine and the Missouri Tigers. You're telling me that team has to go so badly that Indiana, with 11 wins and whose only loss came to an Ohio State team that now looks like the favorite to win the national title, Indiana can't go so that Alabama can go? That's crazy. And of course fans then are going to have that reaction. I mean, he said the words out loud that we shouldn't be getting so caught up on wins, right? That it's not about getting the most deserving teams in, that it's about getting the best teams in. And that is an insane thing to say. And I don't think that Kirk Herbstreit is getting messaging from the SEC. I don't think ESPN is getting messaging from the SEC, but I do think there develops an echo chamber.
Sure.
At a certain point, where if you hear people say the SEC is far and away the best conference in the country enough times, you start to just believe it as a fact, to the point that you think an 11-1 Indiana, who didn't play a super strong Big Ten schedule, don't get me wrong, but an 11-1 Indiana should be left out of the playoff, or any other similar team should be left out of the playoff. An 11-1 SMU, for instance, or 11-2, I guess they were, should be left out of the playoff. So that a 9-3 SEC team with multiple mediocre losses on its resume can get in, it does start to feel like home cooking to some degree. And ESPN has the power to influence a tremendous amount of the college football narrative. Like, no media entity at that level is as intertwined with one sport as ESPN is with college football, and specifically with the SEC. And I hope that this does not result in ESPN perpetuating that for years to come, because we want and should try to cultivate a more balanced college football to the degree that we can. And I would like to see us, if anything, pulling in the other direction, trying to counterbalance some of the power coalescence that's happening in the SEC and the Big Ten in the interest of the health of the sport, rather than leaning into it in a way that then makes it seem like nobody else should bother playing football, and maybe even the middle part of the Big Ten shouldn't bother playing football.
Man, I appreciate the very in-depth answer. Nate Gatter's with us here, and before I let you go, I do want to get your opinion on Olaf Melberg, named the permanent replacement for Bradley Carnell as the St. Louis City head coach. What do you know about him? Do you know anything about him? What is your thoughts there?
What I know is that the results are a little bit underwhelming on paper. In his previous managerial experience. What I also know is that there's a lot I don't know in terms of all the context that was going on around that club and around their position in the table. And what I also know is that, and I don't want this to sound wrong, because I think the manager is important. I think Bradley Carnell was important. I think John Hackworth was and is important. And I think that Olaf Melberg will be important. Ultimately, St. Louis City's identity is dictated by Lutz Pfannenstiel, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
As compared to, say, a club like, now this has changed, I would have said that, you know, in Philadelphia, say, Jim Curtin had a sort of outsized impact on that club. He and Ernst Tanner were leading it together, but Jim Curtin felt like the primary guy. Obviously, that's changed now with him leaving Philadelphia and the aforementioned Bradley Carnell now announced to be taking over as the union's new manager, where I think he'll do well. That strikes me as a very good fit. I think St. Louis City, as has been the case from the very beginning, in a sporting sense, and even in some non-sporting senses, revolves around Lutz Pfannenstiel. Carolyn Kindle has entrusted him with the keys to the entire organization, and as long as he is in St. Louis, which I expect all parties involved would like to be for quite some time, he is going to dictate how things happen in the club. And that doesn't mean that he's telling managers what they can and can't do. It means he's hiring managers who are still going to work in the image that he sees for the club, down to playing style in areas that we might see identify more ordinarily with a manager. And that's evidenced by John Hackworth's former position in director of coaching, which was primarily about streamlining the message and making sure the message was being properly communicated and conveyed, not just through the first team coaching staff and through the St. Louis City 2 coaching staff, but all the way down to the teenage rungs of the academy, that the players throughout the club, even at the lowest levels, were getting the same messaging. They were getting in a clear-cut way, and that would allow a seamless transition for a player from the under-16s up to the under-19s or whatever, up to the second team, up to the first team, ultimately, in one day. I don't think that has changed significantly. Will we see some tweaks to playing style? Potentially. I mean, I think the results last season indicate that it might be worth exploring an approach that isn't quite so adverse to possessing the ball. And I wonder if that might be something that continues, because I thought John Hackworth found a good balance. To be honest, I was thinking he had a really good chance at the job. I'm glad they've been able to retain him, even though he didn't get the full-time job.
Right.
I guess my ultimate answer is, I think that Lutz Pfannenstiel is ultimately the head guy in charge, and fans shouldn't expect any dramatic changes to playing style or the management of personnel as long as he's in charge.
Excellent. That's kind of what I figured. That's I have said as much, you know, going back to, you know, what kind of influence Pfannenstiel has. So I appreciate that. And great just to catch up. Like I said, I'm thrilled for you and everything that's come your way. And I wish you nothing but the best. And hopefully we'll see you around as the summer comes back here in St. Louis.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Looking forward to that as well, Joe, and glad, even if it became more play-by-play and media world answers maybe than you were expecting, it was good to chat.
No worries whatsoever, Nate, man. That's a much appreciated. Nate Gatter with us here. You hear him here on Camo X. You hear him on Westwood One Sports. Great to catch up with him. We'll take a break. Randy Mullman's coming up on the other side of the break. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Jill Pott in for Matt Pauly. Coming right back on Camo X. Joe Pott back in on the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. And in for Matt Pauly tonight is a little bit under the weather, so hopefully he's recovering, recuperating, resting, all of those things that you need to do on this snowy, cold Monday here in St. Louis. We'll keep things moving. A lot of college, as I said, tonight, and we'll keep that going here with our next guest. That is Randy Mullman. You hear him. Well, you hear him here often, but you also hear him in the building at Faurot Field, Memorial Stadium. He is the in-house PA voice for the Mizzou Tigers. You also hear him a lot at Mizzou Arena because he is doing more and more of their public address. He is the radio voice of the women's basketball team at SIUE, and he's done a lot of men's games for me over the year. So, Randy, thanks for joining us tonight. Thank you on short notice especially.
I appreciate it, Joe. Thanks for having me.
For sure. You and I have chatted a little bit about it. I know you've had a chance to talk about it elsewhere, but and I talked about it a lot more last week when I was on. But it certainly feels like it's a feel good ending to the Missouri Tigers season, going to Nashville, winning the bowl, Brady Cook going out the way that he did, and getting to 10 wins again, back to back seasons, which is not the norm. That does not happen every day. This was a really good end to another good season for Eli Drinkwitz and the Tigers.
First time since 2013-14 that they had double-digit wins. You know, it's funny. You keep hearing the words from fans, oh, you know, it was a disappointing season. And I don't know when 10-3 became disappointing. 11-2 last year, obviously, Cotton Bowl victory, beat Ohio State, a brand, even though maybe they didn't have all of their starters playing in that game, but you beat a brand name in the Cotton Bowl with one of the biggest bowls in the country, and you finish in the top 10. And I get it. Excuse me. Everybody thinking, well, you know, it's a preseason top 10 ranking, and Missouri, you know, they do what they do last year. They're in the playoff, and they were one game worse. And that's quote-unquote disappointing. I thought it was a great season. A couple of rough road games at A&M and at Alabama, and that's really what did Missouri in, regardless of how South Carolina ended. But, you know, unlike, you know, I was listening to Nate Gatter previous as you were chatting with him, and you know, unlike these other SEC schools who made a social media claim to a playoff spot, teams like Ole Miss and South Carolina and Alabama, they all lost to teams they were not supposed to lose to, and Missouri beat every team on their schedule they were supposed to beat. So I think it was a great year and a good bowl win, the only SEC win versus the Big Ten in the bowls. And Missouri got that win against Iowa. And, it, you know, I get that the bowl season's a little less important if you're not in the playoff. Totally understand that. It makes total sense. But, you know, anytime you can play for a 10th win and you've got a bunch of seniors that are invested and they want to play their last game at Missouri and you can get a win versus a Big Ten opponent, that's a big deal.
Yeah, you bring up a point. Jacob Sersosimo was on with us last week before, I think it was before the game, but he said that it should say something about the program and about Eli Drinkwitz that the number of players that wanted to play in this game. And obviously we know there was guys making they had made the decision. They're going to the NFL. Fine. They're going to sit. And we know Luther Burden, the third, one of them who was on the sideline in uniform. So that was great. But the number of guys that stayed on you know, practiced for the extra 3 weeks that went and played in that game. And then obviously the way they came back in that game, this clearly was not a game. Nobody was taking this game lightly.
No. And they were competitive. They fought, they played in the image of their quarterback. I mean, Brady Cook is will be forever known as I don't know if you're going to think of him in the as far as being having natural or as much talent, pure talent, as a Brad Smith or a Blaine Gabbert or a Chase Daniel. But you're not going to find another quarterback that had more heart and grit and determination and leadership than him. And the team mirrored him. I mean, especially in that game, it was you have several games this year. You're down against Auburn. Brady Cook runs to the hospital to get an x-ray, comes back, leads you on two touchdown drives to win the game. This team took on the persona of their quarterback this year, and that's how they got to 10 wins.
Randy Mullman with us here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly on this Monday evening. Glad you're along with us as well. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk some Missouri basketball. Obviously, so you go back 2 years to Dennis Gates' first year, which was, you know, clearly the idea was we're going to load up on transfers, we're going to get some experience, and obviously took it to, a very well, very good season into the second round of the NCAA tournament. Last year was a down year, which we knew was going to be probably not as down as we thought. But this year, right back up. This has been a really good basketball team. I know they had a tough one against Auburn, but my goodness, it's Auburn. And I can't imagine playing on the road in the SEC, but Dennis Gates as well has things moving in the right direction, I feel like.
He does. And, you know, I'm sort of privileged enough to have a seat right there on at the scorer's table, and I get to kind of watch him and listen to him. And he's always teaching. He's never in a player's face, you know, embarrassing anybody. He's teaching, he's talking, he's coaching, he's mentoring. And yes, last year I think everyone knew it was going to be a little bit of a down year. I don't obviously think it was anyone thought it would be as down as it was. But, you know, this year you've got Mark Mitchell, who's transferred from Duke, and he's a Kansas City native. They've got a point guard in Anthony Robinson that's really coming into his own now, who fills up a stat sheet. They got this instant offense off the bench in Marquez Warwick, who comes from Northern Kentucky, a mid-major, where he just was one of the top scoring players in the country. And he comes off the bench and he just lights it up. They've got some real pieces this year, and they're going to be very interesting, but it's a lot of new faces and a lot of gelling that still needs to happen. And everyone says, well, that's what the non-conference schedule is for. They played three Power Four teams in non-conference. Mm-hmm. And that was Illinois, Cal, and Kansas. They won two of those three games. And so now you're getting into the meaningful part of the schedule. The SEC could get, Joe, 10, 11, maybe 12 teams. That's how deep the conference is. And so now every single game you're playing, it seems like a ranked team every week, every game. And they opened up at number two Auburn, and Auburn lived up to their ranking, but they get LSU on Tuesday, tomorrow night. And I just think they're going to be a very interesting team because they have so many interesting pieces.
Yeah, like I was looking at the SEC again before the new year, before anybody had started conference play, and a combined, you know, 3-4 losses or something in the conference. It was ridiculous. I think Illinois is really, really good. Mizzou obviously played them toe-to-toe. They beat Kansas when Kansas was number one. I mean, you didn't mention Memphis. I think Memphis is a good program as well. They opened the year with Memphis. Sure. So, you know, not a Power Four, but so yeah, I definitely think things are on the right track there. Okay, so I mentioned you also do a women's basketball game. You're around women's basketball for SIUE. You're around SIUE a lot. Like any other conference, the Ohio Valley Conference is a tough conference to navigate and certainly tough to win on the road. You've seen the men's team at SIUE. Where do you think the Cougars stack up?
Well, Coach Barone, first of all, has done such a great job. Getting players to buy into his defensive style. And we're, you know, we talk so much about offense. They're the number one defensive team in the OVC. He's gotten Rayshon Taylor, who was a St. Louis metro area kid from Collinsville, He's battled a couple of injuries, but he's gotten them. I'm sure Rayshon Taylor has had opportunities to enter the portal, how talented he is, to maybe take his talents to a higher level or power four level conference. But he has stayed at SIUE, stayed in the OVC, stayed with Coach Barone. He's one of the top players in the conference. And if you haven't, if you're in St. Louis and you love college basketball, if you're in the metro area and you have not gone to an SIUE game to go check out the way this team plays, and Rayshon Taylor in particular, one of the stalwarts for the Cougars, who is now the Division I leading scorer of all time in SIUE school history. Do yourself a favor and go watch SIUE. You know, they beat St. Louis University a couple of seasons ago at Chaffetz. This is not a, this is not your grandfather's SIUE, Joe. This is a legitimate contender for an NCAA tournament bid in the Ohio Valley Conference. And let's be honest, the Ohio Valley Conference has gotten to a point now, and a lot of these mid-major conferences have gotten better and better because of the transfer portal. I know I was one that was saying several years ago when this portal was really starting to take off, I know a lot of people who cover college basketball nationally were saying, oh, you know, the rich is going to get richer. I didn't see it that way. I thought we would see a lot of really good players who would go to Power Four teams, end up or high level community college teams or junior college teams, end up in mid-major conferences, which would boost the profile of those conferences, boost the competition in those conferences, and really make them legitimate threats when they get into the NCAA tournament. And I think we're seeing it unfolding, and the OVC is one of those conferences.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. I feel that way, and it's like we said, and I was talking about this with Earl Austin Jr. at the top of the show, that it just proves it's conference basketball, no matter what conference you're in, whether it's the SEC or the OVC, it is tough. It's difficult to navigate. A little shorter than I wanted it to be tonight, but I appreciate you jumping on, especially because it was short notice. Always appreciate the opportunity to catch up with you. And I know you and I will be back on the road tomorrow for men's and women's OVC basketball at EIU. But thanks again, man, for jumping on tonight.
No problem, Joe. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, buddy.
Sounds great. Randy Mollman with us here. We've got to wrap up this edition of the Graybar Sports Open Line. We'll do it on the other side of the break. Joe Pott sitting in for Matt Pauley here on this Monday night, and we will wrap things up on the other side on Camo X.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on Camo X.
It's Joe Pott in for Matt Pauley tonight, and Matt under the weather, so he is hopefully back tomorrow. I will not be here. If Matt is not, it will be somebody else in this spot. But either way, of course, we'll always have you covered here on KMOX. But hopefully this day down has helped Matt and given him the opportunity to start to feel a little bit better. As I mentioned, I will be on the road with SIUE basketball. They're back on the road tomorrow with Eastern Illinois. Cougars have won two in a row. And as you heard, both from Earl Austin Jr. and from Randy Mollman, Rayshon Taylor from Collinsville, Illinois, who is now in his graduate year. He's played four seasons. He actually injured himself in the summer before his true freshman year. So he didn't even get a true freshman year. I had a knee injury. But he has come back to play 4 years, four seasons over 5 years in the same program. And it says as much about him as it does the program and the university and everything that is the way everything is trending for SIUE, SIUE athletics, and certainly for men's basketball. Brian Barone also had two twins last year graduate after playing five full years, counting the COVID year, in the program as well. But it's a great brand of basketball. They're 9-6 overall. They just won a couple of games at home to get back to even in the conference, 2-2. And they're back home on Saturday afternoon at 4:00 against Tennessee Tech. So I would invite everybody to come out. Thanks so much to our guests tonight, Earl Austin Jr., Jerry Palm from CBS Sports, Nate Gatter from here on Camo X, but also Westwood One Sports, Randy Mollman, who does so much work at Mizzou and a lot of stuff for us at SIUE. Great to catch up with all of them. big thanks to Kyle Sixta, who put it all together. And again, we had some, it was a little bit of short notice, but we appreciate all the guests jumping on and chatting with us tonight. I had a good time chatting with you. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well. As I said, hopefully Matt Pauly back tomorrow. Hope he's getting better and feeling better, but happy to sit in the chair for the evening. I'm Joe Pott. Keep it here on KMOX.